Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, and we're going to go to our regular session of MERS staff here in just a moment. But first, we are going to put in a breaking news alert from the Capitol and our interview with Tom Leonard, the Speaker of the House. Have you been taking up following this Michigan State University stuff with what's going on with Larry Nassar?
Yes, I have. Certainly I've been following it. I've been reading the reports in the media. And, over the past several weeks, I've been trying, as leader of this chamber, to give MSU their space. The prosecutor in me wants to see information come out, wants to see what's going to be said, what's going to be told, what's going to be revealed. But on Friday night, when I got home and read the reports that there had been an independent investigation, and that a report had not been produced, I found that to be absolutely reprehensible. I was a prosecutor in Genesee County for 3 years. While I was there, there were hundreds of investigations that were conducted. We brought thousands of criminal charges over the course of those 3 years. And not once did I ever see an investigation where there was not a report. Even when there wasn't credible evidence of a crime, there's always a report that has been or that's produced. So when I read that, I felt that at best for Michigan State University, they have been grossly negligent and incompetent. And worst case scenario, something's being covered up. So at this point, I believe the U.S. Justice Department, the FBI, the Michigan State Police, or the Attorney General need to go in. They need to conduct an investigation. They need to put witnesses under oath, and they need to find out who knew what and when they knew it. It's time for Michigan State to be transparent to the people of this state so that we can start to seek justice for all these young women who were abused.
It sounds like Larry Nassar snowblowed everybody, though, that he was fondling women while he was doing this procedure that apparently was okayed, and nobody knew about it. He led this double life.
Well, and that's what we need to find out. Obviously, we know crimes were committed. This monster just got sentenced because he was found with over 30,000 images of child pornography on his computer. He just pled guilty to 10 counts of the absolute worst rape crimes in this state. So there's no doubt that crimes were committed. We know that it happened. The question now is, who knew what and when did they know it? And has there been a cover-up? And at this point, I believe Michigan State University has shown themselves to be so grossly incompetent. It is time for another entity to step in, put witnesses under oath, and find out who knew what and when they knew it.
So when you read this Fitzgerald letter, did it give you comfort that internally they were doing everything they could to make sure there was nothing else going on?
No. In fact, it actually, quite frankly, it made my skin crawl. Again, the fact that there was an investigation and a report was not produced. Michigan State continues to claim that those at the top knew nothing about this. And if they didn't, I don't know why in the world, if the investigation revealed that those at the top didn't know what was going on, I have no idea why there wouldn't have been a report produced to prove that or to demonstrate that. And the fact that there isn't is absolutely reprehensible.
Do you get the feeling they're circling the wagons?
I don't know what you call it. Again, they have been grossly incompetent here. And again, best case scenario, gross incompetence, and worst case scenario, something's being covered up. And it's time for somebody to go in and find out who knew what and when they knew it.
As the Speaker of the House, do you think there's anything legislatively that can be done?
Well, at this point, obviously, because of the separation of powers and because of the autonomy that universities have within our state constitution, I believe that this investigation would be best suited, again, with the Attorney General, with the Michigan State Police, or with the U.S. Justice Department. But That said, if none of those entities choose to investigate this matter, if none of them choose to get to the bottom of what's going on and what happened, then I believe once we start the budget process, we need to have serious conversations as to whether or not there will be appropriation consequences for Michigan State University if they don't come in and start giving us answers to the questions that we have.
So if they are uncooperative in any way to an investigation, then that's a tool that the legislature could use.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, there's three legs to this stool, and this is not a conversation I've had with the Senate Majority Leader or the governor. But, you know, as me speaking on behalf of myself as Speaker of the House, if there's not an investigation and they don't start to give us answers to these questions, and we don't begin the process, the healing process for this university, and don't start to seek justice for these dozens of women who were abused, then yes, I personally believe that there ought to be consequences in the appropriations process as we go forward.
Now, reading the letter, it appears to me that there's some concern on the MSU's part that the attorneys for these victims are trying to make more hay out of this than there really is. Do you want to address that the bad guys here are the attorneys of these victims?
Well, what we know is that there are dozens of victims in this case. We know that a monster just pled guilty to 10 of the worst crimes that this state has on its books. Again, reading that report and seeing those words absolutely made my skin crawl. And it is high time for the university to step up and be transparent with the people of this state so that this healing process can begin.
Anything else you want to say on this subject?
I believe it's time for Luanna Simon to resign.
Right now?
Absolutely. You know, I've mentioned we have this situation where an independent investigation was conducted and there was no report. I believe that's absolutely reprehensible. The fact that in 2014, there was a botched Title IX investigation by the university, and not only was this monster allowed to stay on staff, but he was also rewarded as the recipient of the Alumnus of the Year. Third, multiple of these women have claimed that the university is not being responsive to their requests. They're not giving them answers to the questions that they have. And quite frankly, I've not even heard an apology by the president. And at this point, we have one of the finest universities in this country whose reputation has been absolutely damaged. And until we have a new leader at the top, I don't believe that healing process can begin. And yes, it's time for her to step down.
How about the Board of Trustees at MSU? What role do they have, if any? Should they stick around?
Well, certainly there has to be oversight, and you know, they're not tasked, if you will, with actually managing the day-to-day operation. So we don't know exactly what they knew, but what we know is that the person at the top, this has gone on for nearly 20 years. We know that there has been criminal convictions, and we know that the person at the top, who had an independent investigation conducted, didn't even have the decency to have a report produced. We know that the person at the top, on her watch, there was a botched Title IX investigation. We know that the person at the top has not been completely open and transparent with the people of this state, and the healing process has not started for these young women. So right now, I believe it's incumbent on her to resign, and that's why I believe there needs to be an investigation. We need to find out who knew what and when they knew it, and then let the dominoes fall from there.
I mentioned the Board of Trustees because they put out a letter a couple weeks ago showing full faith in Luanna Simon that she'll get this under control.
Well, I would respectfully disagree. I don't know what information that they had at their disposal when they made that. I don't know if they knew whether or not there wasn't a report that was there. But again, when I read that an investigation had been conducted and there was no report, I found that to be absolutely reprehensible. I've never heard of a situation like this before, and certainly it's time for her to step down.
Joined by the boss, John Roering, Jack Spencer, and Mike Malott. A little later, Brian Kelly will be joining us. I'm going to have a little bit of a scratchy voice on that interview, as you'll tell, but that is me doing the interview. I think I've successfully beaten this laryngitis for this podcast. First, though, guys, I want to talk about Michigan State University becoming, I think, political gold for folks looking for office in 2018. We've already seen Gretchen Whitmer and the Democratic Attorney General candidates jump on MSU about what they knew about Larry Nassar and when. And I think we're only going to see more jump on the bandwagon as it comes on. Jack, why is this such lush territory if you're looking at 2018?
Well, it's one of those ones where everybody is going to try to outdo the other person in showing their concern and the fact that that this needs to be investigated and that they're upset. And it's like, you know, the sort of the concern meter. How do you score on the concern meter as far as is expressing, you know, your dismay at what has been going on there with the Nassar thing?
It's hard not to defend women who have been sexually abused.
Well, I mean, it is one of the worst crimes that we have to talk about and that we have to prosecute as a society, and it's certainly one of the most offensive to our sensibilities. So in that sense alone, you've got a predefined, pretty good-sized pool of victims, to parlay the use of the term the Attorney General uses, that cries out for justice to a certain degree, and that's why you've got all this attention. I mean, if you're running for AG, there's no better cause to rally to right now, and that's, you know, popular than this cause for clear investigation and total transparency.
There's no chance, Mike, that Bill Schuette will not do an investigation on MSU, is there?
Oh, I think he has to. How do you justify not doing it? I think he has to.
Bill Schuette has been one to investigate issues in the past with Grand Rapids Veterans Home, even though nothing really came of that. But, of course, the Flint water crisis, he pressed charges against Cindy Gamrat and Todd Corser. I think the only question is, does he do it before Christmas or does he wait till the new year, or what do you think?
Well, my prediction is they will carefully weigh the case and decide whatever makes the most sense politically.
Without fear or favor.
Yes, yes.
I'm guessing it's either late this week or early next week that he announces.
I want to just comment on how astute these folks are over at the Attorney General's and for releasing this MSU letter when they did. If you listen to the Bill Schuette roundtable that we put on this podcast on the 6th, you'll hear during Bill Schuette's interview that they had Michigan State's response that day, which was on Wednesday. But they didn't release it on Wednesday, and they didn't release it on Thursday. They released it on Friday, like an hour or two before Gretchen Whitmer was going to do her press availability on her calling for an investigation into the Michigan State Larry Nassar situation. So essentially trumping Gretchen Whitmer's announcement before Gretchen Whitmer was able to grab headlines.
Well, that shop has a lot of talent. I mean, think about it. I mean, Rusty Hills is a former chairman of the Republican Party. He's been through the wars, a lot of them, and he certainly knows how to run a media operation, and that, I think, kind of demonstrates that.
I thought it was really interesting, Jack, in your pundit piece last week, you talked to four different pundits, Republican, Democrat, all of them said that Lou Anna Simon's got to go. That was pretty shocking to me.
I didn't really know how they were going to answer that question, to be honest with you. That was one where I wouldn't have necessarily had a real strong opinion on how they were going to respond. And they all pretty much seemed to be saying, look, you know, it's time for her to go in one way or another. Some were a little kinder to her and others weren't. But yes, and from what I've heard, after that, that was the question the pundits themselves got the most feedback on afterward.
I wanted to talk to you, Mike, about what do you think about Michigan State's strategy at this point? It appears as if they're circling the wagons. They brought in this attorney who apparently was going to look at stuff. We were all under the impression that he was doing an investigation and there was going to be a report, only to find out that there is no report because there's nothing to see here. What do you think of how they're doing this as opposed to how Penn State did it by basically opening things up, saying, okay, we had a problem here, there. We're going to settle with the victims. We got the dollar amount. We try and just flush it and get it out of our system as quickly as possible.
Sooner or later, it's got to come out. But this is typical of universities. Universities always circle the wagons. And the bigger the university, the more it seems like they want to hold their information inside. But over time and public pressure, sooner or later, all of the information has to come out. It eventually does.
It draws out the pain in the process, doesn't it?
Yeah, but tell them that. I mean, it's the typical mistake that you've got a public relations problem. People make the mistake that if you shut that behind closed doors, it's going to go away. It never does.
We'll see how this how long this stretches. This seems to me like a tailor-made 2018 campaign issue.
Well, let us not also forget it allows people in government to go after something other than screwing up in government.
Right, and other, like the Flint water crisis.
And other than where one side or another is going to be on the defensive. This is, you know, free for all for everybody.
This isn't an administration versus Bill Schuette incident. This isn't Republican versus Democrat. This is something where you can have equal outrage.
To have a common boogeyman to beat on.
Well, yeah, and let no one think that I, as, you know, a politician or I, as a lawmaker, have not been strong enough in my pursuit of this and strong enough in my utter shock at what happened.
Yeah, I see the legislature getting involved at a certain point, maybe in the appropriations process. I wonder what kind of boilerplate they stick into that budget. I'm going to guess that's not going to go unrecognized, John.
No.
let's turn the page here to the debate last week on the municipal employee pension benefits. You know, Jack, you actually had a great question that you forwarded me at one point that nobody's really asked. And you asked, how many of the municipal employees that this impacts, that these retirement changes that this impacts, are actually police and fire? Because you would think from listening to the debate, it was 100%.
Yeah.
Is that why you asked me that?
Well, the whole thing on all of these benefits kinds of things and all of these unions, more or less, you have to make these union people act like the regular marketplace does in terms of changing their benefits and adjusting their benefits. All of that, it can be pretty popular to do if you actually look at the polling until you throw in police and fire.
As soon as you do that.
And then all of a sudden then, whoa, these are the people that if there's, you know, an emergency at 4 a.m, these are the people I call.
Exactly. So you want to cut their benefits? So you put the police and fire in the forefront because you know what the answer to your question was?
It was like a quarter, more than a quarter.
Yeah. So of all the people that were impacted by what they're doing right now, we're talking about a quarter to 30% are actually police and fire. The rest are maybe trash pickup, parks pickup, administrative, they work in payroll.
Well, you know, for example, people forget this, but remember the whole right to work thing, which was absolutely greased the way it came out of there after the 2012 election, because my gosh, the Republicans could do what they want in lame duck. There was going to be 2 years before the next election, and it was going to be a midterm, et cetera, et cetera. Even that. Remember, they left out the police and fire.
Exempt from right to work. They're the only ones who are exempt from it on the public payroll side of things. John, how come this thing blew a tire? How come what the Republicans initially wanted to do, as recommended by the West Michigan Policy Forum and then picked up by Arlen Meekhoff and Tom Leonard to an extent, how come their plan didn't go when everything else that they've wanted with like MIPSers and so forth seemed to go just fine?
Two very toxic words, especially when you put them together, emergency manager. Yeah, it was a 3-member board that would have had the authority to kind of swoop in and take over and make changes to fund these pensions under this plan originally. But it doesn't matter. I think the result of the Flint water crisis is this state doesn't like anymore emergency managers and sweeping powers. I think we got burnt by it in the city of Flint, and nobody wants to go there again. So therefore, this concept wasn't going to go anywhere.
And I think also, Mike, is this idea that the way to solve these types of problems that maybe municipalities have is to cut. And I think that the message coming back, especially from Flint, was, you know, maybe it's just not all about cutting. Maybe we should do something about making sure municipalities have some revenue.
Well, that's a subject that the legislature doesn't want to deal with, but Democrats repeatedly raise the issue of revenue sharing. Sooner or later, if you're going to have a government, you got to fund it. So, you can't cut your way to prosperity. Sooner or later, you have to raise some money somewhere.
And then the other problem that I think that they had is that the state doesn't have a lot of credibility on the issue of OPEB. You take a look at some of the other funds that they have out there.
The state police is funded at, 14, 15%? You have the judge's retirement fund. The OPEB is at 0% funding. I think the best fund that they have is, I think it was 40% or something like that. So they're not even funded at the desirable levels that they were asking these local governments to be funded.
Well, I just think basically you have, you know, people kind of understand these cities like Flint and Detroit that have gone decades and are beyond the point of having, you know, mountains and mountains of debt that you can't even imagine how they'll ever pay it off. The problem is when the solution is also coming from an entity that, as we saw in Flint, is not a bastion of wisdom that's right all the time either. And I think I think that's the flaw. It's really easy to sit there at state government and say, why, you crazy people in Detroit, you crazy people in Flint, we've got to send somebody in there to fix it. But as we've seen, Flint being the prime example, there are problems with that too. Like, hey, what happened to the basic idea of representing the people of the city and actually having somebody who's running things who has constituents there? Flint, I think a lot of people saw. I do not believe that the situation in Flint would have developed the way it did if there had been people there who were hearing their constituents complain, as opposed to, well, we're in here to balance the budget and get rid of the red ink. Mm-hmm. And I think people have that basic concept, and I think there's a lot of questioning about, there's not questioning about the need to take care of municipalities' debts, but there's questioning about exactly how you do it, and gee, maybe we ought to look at ourselves a little bit.
Well, I also think, and we got to keep this in mind too, that since the legislature crafted their recommendations on what to do about the Flint water crisis, what did Jim Stamos have? What, I think 30 recommendations, something like that, and several regarding the emergency manager. None of those have been done yet, and I think that they're probably waiting until whoever the next governor is to come in and do whatever he or she wants to do on that measure. No sense in going in and trying to change the emergency manager law now when you figure that whoever's coming in next is going to change it again anyway. So leave that alone and just not touch this emergency manager issue. Kind of like what you said, John, it's kind of been stinked up right now. Let's just leave it in a corner and let somebody else deal with it. And then the new people will do what they want to do with it anyway. So there's no sense in doing more emergency manager stuff. It's kind of run its course.
Just leave it alone for now. Leave it alone.
Well, let's move on to the interview portion with the Lieutenant Governor, Brian Kelly.
Good morning. How are you doing today, Lieutenant Governor?
Doing well, Kyle. Great to be on the podcast again.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Well, you're rolling out here your campaign for governor, and it's been kind of a long road as far as the announcement. I wanted to get your impression on how this rollout has gone, because there's been some commentary that you missed an opportunity by not announcing earlier with your ad campaign and the whole May 30 big announcement thing. Are you happy with the way this campaign has been rolled out?
I thought last week's rollout went beautifully. It was a really exciting week and a very warm reception across the state, whether it was in Detroit up north or the West Michigan. There was a very warm reception, a lot of enthusiasm around it. Had a very, very good fundraiser, in fact, my best one ever last week, and then the push across the state and the town hall and so forth. Everything was exactly like I wanted it to be. In terms of the timing, when you look at these endless political cycles, I just think in a state where people work as hard as they do in Michigan, that they're going to appreciate somebody that stayed focused longer on the responsibilities that they've been given instead of contributing to this endless cycle of campaigning, where it seems like the next campaign starts the day after the last one ended. I mean, people deserve a break from that.
So you're pleased then with how things turned out as far as the ballot proposal and how that all shook down?
Well, the ballot proposal, there's a group of activists that have been working on this for years that have taken the day-to-day load from me so that I could concentrate on a wider campaign. And I think that they're doing and are going to do a great job, but it's a very, very important issue. But it was time for me to shift my focus and my attention toward a wider set of issues in the campaign for governor. So I'm just excited to be at this point now where we're not just celebrating how far Michigan has come with 500,000 new jobs and the 17-year low in unemployment and income that is rising now at a top 10 rate in the nation. Who would have thought that was possible? But I'm more excited about what the what we do with this strong foundation, where we go from here. And all of it seems possible now because of how far we've come together.
So you don't think the part-time legislature thing was a waste of time?
There was, first of all, good public policy is never a waste of time. And I'm not the type of person that leads with just pulling on everything. To me, it really is about the best public policy. I'm not even a big fan of the political process. I mean, it's in terms of all the fighting, the bickering that happens out there. For me, it's about the work. It's about getting things done. It's about making things happen. It's about working together with people in order to deliver real results. And I think that's been the secret to our success here, is that we have stayed about the work. When the political climate has really been all about the fight, and it seems like it just keeps the ante keeps on rising there. Here we just get stuff done. We put one issue up after another. We find a great solution and we move forward. And it shows in the results. I mean, it's not just in the jobs and the income growth that we're seeing and the workforce growth that we're seeing, but even on a population basis, we are now 10th in the nation at 25 to 34 year olds. That was a generation of people that we were losing to other states. In fact, we have now the greatest inbound migration of people with four-year degrees than any Great Lakes state. That's a real turnaround from before. We were last in as recent as 2010 and 11, and we've been continuously growing. Now we're on top, and it's a great place to be. You can really build a future out of the type of changes that we've seen here in Michigan.
Changing gears here, I wanted to talk about our alma mater, Michigan State University. Do you think that Luanna Simon is the right person to lead this university right now amid the post-Larry Nassar conviction?
Well, I trust that the university and the trustees are going through and doing a very thorough investigation and review, and I think it would be inappropriate for me to weigh in ahead of that whole process on that. But I am thankful that monster has been convicted and justice is brought to him. Now it's important to really go through and do a thorough review of everything that's happened in the last few years and how could this have happened in the first place? What could have been done differently to stop it earlier? That is work that needs to happen. I trust that it is happening, and I'll reserve commentary on the leadership till a later date.
Do you think Donald Trump is the right person to lead our country at this time?
I do. He was elected by the people of the United States of America. And one thing I'll say about Donald Trump, even, people can agree and disagree on different issues, but he loves America, and this America First, it's his overall policy and strategy, but it's also an attitude. It's something that our country really needs, and so as he's moving forward in major tax reform, the opioid addiction crisis, a major priority. Those are two policy areas that matter a lot to me. And so he is the right person for our country, and I believe that he's working very hard in a fairly impossible political climate to make things happen like it is, the things that happen in D.C. these days.
Are you going to face some political issues by having come out and spoken out against them last fall?
Well, when it comes to the 2016 election, that's the past, and I'm not a rearview mirror kind of a person. There are several areas, or many, many areas. In fact, it's in most areas where the direction that President Trump and Vice President Pence want to go well aligned with where we need to go here in Michigan and the priorities that are being set. And I will continue to find those areas where we can work together in order to create the best possible future for the people of the state of Michigan, the people of America. This is in this divisive political climate that we're in, we need more people that are willing to do the hard work of coming together to find those areas where we can work together and get things done, make progress for the people that we represent. And I believe that's a real distinction between the way that I operate and the way so many others have approached public service. That to me, it's just about the work. It's about getting it done. It's about getting results for our people.
Lieutenant Governor, when did you know that there was lead in the water in Flint?
It was the last few days in September of 2015 was when there was some indication out of the Department of Environmental Quality that based on some testing and things they were doing, there might be a problem. And then as a few more days went by, say into October 1st or so, it seemed like that was around the time that it was confirmation. Like, yeah, there is a problem here. And I've always been very thankful, especially to the legislature that moved very quickly with an appropriation in order to move immediately change the water source back to the Great Lakes Water Authority. And that's when all the work of the recovery really began. And as you know, I moved my office there in 2016 in order to be on the ground looking on the future of people. It just seemed like there are so many that were kind of arguing about the past, and what people at the city of Flint needed was somebody to be with them on the ground, shoulder to shoulder, working on the future.
Yeah, I'm sure that you saw the Attorney General's comments. Your initial thoughts, his prosecution in Flint have been political. His response has been, that's just nonsense, period. What have you made of his reaction to your observations?
What else is he going to say? I mean, here's the thing, though. It's not just, that's not like it's just my opinion, right? I mean, Frank Kelly, the longest serving attorney general in Michigan history, publicly said in an op-ed piece that it was politicized. And so does he think that that Frank Kelly is nonsense? Or how about Maura Corrigan, the former chief justice of the Michigan Supreme Court, that had come to the same conclusion about this process and these charges? And it's, well, yes, I've said it out loud, but as you know very well, Kyle, because you cover you cover people in this across the whole political system, it's pretty hard to find somebody that doesn't work for Bill Foudy that has a different opinion than what I expressed and what Frank Kelly expressed and what Maura Corrigan expressed.
One more question here, and I'll let you go. Do you have any reservations at all of hitching your political wagon to that of Rick Snyder?
I don't. This is, but this election is not about Rick Snyder. I'm not going to try to separate myself from the administration that has worked so hard and delivered so many results on major tax reform in moving us from our business climate went from 40th to 12th, and our tax ranking went from 49th to 8th, up 500,000 new private sector jobs. And here's the thing, though. Not only did we grow in we're number one in the country in manufacturing jobs, we were number six overall in job growth across the entire United States of America. I'm not going to separate from a 500,000 new jobs and a 17-year low on unemployment. I'm not going to separate from decreasing the debt in our state by $20 billion by balancing the budget as a matter of routine, well on our way to $1 billion in the rainy day fund now. I mean, there's been a real transformation that has happened here, and the people in our state really do appreciate that. Not only that, you know, Republican primary voters, though, a lot of, I know that conventional wisdom is always that somehow Rick Snyder has a problem with Republican primary voters. He has extremely high approval ratings, and he should, because the results of this last 7 years have been so strong. But as we move forward in the future, it really is about where we go from here. I think everybody who's who's not a political operative. It just looks at Michigan today compared to 2010 and the lost decade before that, agrees that Michigan has been on an incredible comeback. The real question is, who has the best plan to build on this strong foundation and take it to the next level? And not only do I have the best plan, I really have the only plan that any candidate has put on the table. And that is, and I think that speaks volumes to the type of representation that I bring to the people of the state of Michigan.
Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, thanks so much for taking time with us today.
Thanks, Calvin. Great to be back on the podcast.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to the Lieutenant Governor for joining us on the podcast. You know, guys, I'd also received a letter from him in the mail. I failed to mention this. The Clean Michigan Government Org petition signatures I got in the mail. Did you get one of these, Jack?
Yes, I did.
And look at that. Look whose name is all over that stuff. I thought he was done with this effort.
Wow, that's some pretty impressive font here. Brian Kelly, Lieutenant Governor.
The envelope returning it is to Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly.
I didn't think he was part of this anymore. I didn't think so either.
That's funny how that works.
Well, how about that? It says right here, he signed it right here, too. This is important.
Well, I think this guy, Brian Kelly, whoever he is, must be a pretty good guy, and he must really, you know, he must really be in favor of draining the swamp.
He wants to clean Michigan.
That's what it looks like to me if I'm the average person here getting that in my mailbox.
Well,
that's what they hope.
Yeah, if they remember.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see if this isn't something we usually see with petition drives, something sent in the mail to
reporters.
Literally everybody, right? Yeah. We'll see what they get on that. I mean, maybe this is a new way to do it. I'm curious to see how it turns out.
We're going to rely on the active journalism of our Capitol Press Corps to get this done.
Exactly, yeah. All right, well, thank you to you guys, and thanks to our sponsor, AT&T, for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Till next week, I'm Kyle Moore, and take care. Under pressure. Pressure.